And then the sterilization thing to me is totally fascinating. I just saw this a couple of weeks ago myself, and it sort of raises up all kinds of implications about God's plan for how we stay connected to our spouse in fullness of our fertility through our ages, even after menopause, and what that may do.
Can I ask a question? I noticed that abortion was number two. I ran Project Rachel, so that's not a surprise for me. But can I ask if that was an abortion between the two partners of that marriage, or whether it was an abortion prior to the marriage for either couple?
It was.
There's two
variables on abortion in the data set.
Okay.
Ever abortion? Have you ever had an abortion? Have you had an abortion in the past 12 months? Now, this is to the woman.
Okay. So not necessarily then looking at if it's abortion in the man's past and the previous relationship.
No.
Okay.
Now, they have, since 2006, they have now been pulling out a population-based men between those ages. I'm not sure. I'll have to look into that. I really don't go into that data set much.
Sure.
But they might ask that. But it's not really paired with a woman and the other data set. So it's a little bit difficult to do that.
Question?
Well, I'm eyes glazing over. I have statistics in my MBA. So I'm looking at all this stuff. So bottom line, as we're going through this now, if you have to end up with what you tell people, that the methods, when properly followed, produce an effectiveness rate of avoiding pregnancy or keeping pregnancy, and they're usually throwing around the number of 99%.
That's correct, but there's problems with that, though.
Okay. Because?
Well, there is the Faring method. The Faring method says that you are infertile in the first day of your cycle and the last day of your cycle. I guarantee you it's going to be 99 to 100% effective. But most of the cycle is considered fertile time. Many of our methods overestimate, you know, like an average of 11 to 17 days. So, yes, if I cover, you know, 17, 18, 19 days of the menstrual cycle, yeah, it's going to be correct use that high. The big thing you need to look at is that 98, 99%, and then look at the typical use. And if there's a big difference, what that means is pretty hard to use. It's difficult to use. So that's another data that you have to look at.
But
I mean, you could say, yeah, abstinent is 99, 100%, but it's not that easy. So.
Related to his question, do you have any intention of taking the fruits of your research here and boiling it down into some kind of a document, pamphlet, flyer, whatever, that would be usable for us on human trafficking?
Yeah, that's my intention. If you look at the text that we have on our website at this point in time, as well as the two brochures that I had on the table, the generic NFP brochure we produced, as well as the myths and reality, the text in there, we were beating around between Dr. Faring, different expert NFP teachers on my advisory board and some other consultants saying, what can we say that's honest but still kind of captures the broad range? So the text we came up with in the statements was a compromised text, but I still think it's rather fair. But for the specifics of the science, that's what I'd like to work with these gentlemen on producing for our website so that you can have it. In order to guide your own language, and you can recommend language. So.
And I am attending with bits and pieces also in current medical research. That stuff I'm doing in divorce, just for the Catholics, I like to do that as an in-depth. But then for a larger study, for trying to get into a better journal, in a journal that would be the entire, you know, all women type of thing. So
I do have a few copies of the review on effectiveness by the OFP article that was published that we talked about at the beginning. If you want that, and if I run out, you can email me for more if you want that. So at least
the original study.
Yeah, this is the physician journal thing that has that table with the efficacy rates.
Yeah, that's, I'd love to have that, but what I'm more after is something that we can pass out in a pre-canon context or a training.
I also do want to emphasize that our job as people in the field, you know, we don't have the luxury of saying, well, there's no evidence, so I can't tell you what to do. Right? if you're facing someone, you've got to do something, right? Much like a doctor has to make a decision when he's facing a patient. Well, there's no proven therapy for your cancer, so I can't do anything. No, they'll do whatever they think is their best judgment, and they'll try it as best they can with the knowledge they have. So we have to kind of translate this, you know, high level, what do we really, really know from an evidence-based, figure out how to translate that into how can it work to help guide your informed counsel in situations where you're running into that. And I don't think we've gotten there yet.
Mike, I just want to compliment you, your co-authors on that article. It was a great review, and you simplified it enough for those not expert in the field to be able to grab it. So
Thank you. It was a great exercise. Hours and hours of conference calls.
Patience on his part, dealing with all these various models, awesome. And also people that really don't, the fertility awareness people too, that are.
Yeah.
So now Mike put together this too, and I think this has some also somewhat of an answer too. If you look at our good efficacy studies, you look at the cycle length that most of them are, 23 to 35 days, 26 to 31. 22 to 35, 21 to 38. You know, that's regular cycle data. We have it up to 42 days because the monitor goes up to 42 days. So we can say that among... Oh, the other point is the World Health Organization is probably more generalizable because it's five countries study. And, you know, it's multiple sites. When you have multiple sites, more generalizability it might be, and there's some other studies that might be. But, you know, even Petra von Kerman says, well, these are German women. You know, they're pretty, you know...
generally pretty well-educated German women.
Yeah, too. Educated German women. They like, you know, rigor, things like that. So my question still is, you know, these are mostly regular cycles. Is Leo Latz's rhythm formula, or what he called the rhythm where you get the two numbers, is that less effective than all these other modern methods? We don't know that. We can't even say that. I suspect that using Leo Latz, if you teach them right, will get the same efficacy with the regular cycle like this.
We do our best when we teach to only give statistics that we can find in the journal, and sometimes we use bulletins, but one of the questions we get a lot is, where are the more recent studies? We've got the WHO from 80 and 1997. We have some studies not about efficacy, but about some other things that are more recent on the achieving side. But where are the recent studies about postponing?
Really, Georgetown and Marquette are doing the, and then the German studies are the recent ones from 2007 and on. You know, I published about three or four articles in the last 2-3 years. Those are the people that have the expertise on to do that. You know, that randomized control trial, that was your money, that was tax money through the Office of Population Care. That's cost $600,000 to do. So, I mean, you have to have a lot. Now, again, all that stuff that you have to go through that I pointed out in regards to the clinical trials and all that stuff, that's not easy to do, to keep up with all that stuff, to do research. That's where you're going to find a lot. So we need more scientists. You know, the encyclicals call for Catholic scientist physicians to do this stuff. But, you know, so.
I was just going to say, globally, the Germans have been committed to doing efficacy studies, right? Anyone else, though, or no? Besides,
well, I
yeah,
Georgetown
the United States
with,
is
yeah.
you.
Georgetown has done some stuff.
Right.
Is Dr. Stanford doing
well, he got some of the Office of Population Affairs studies. He's looking at the CREATE model, and he's trying to find a way of looking at the CREATE model that we could look at the efficacy from that and make comparisons type of thing. And I'm not sure where he's at. I think he has collected all the data.
The study's completed. They've finished their in-life phase, but they haven't finished analyzing. So, yeah, we're anxiously waiting here because, importantly, that study will begin to address different definitions of intentionality and different behavior patterns through the fertile cycle. So we'll get a better read of how typical use of Creighton lays up against more consistent definitions that have been used in the other methods.
Yeah, I know myself in regards to, you know, we have on our online site where you have to click on avoid or achieving. I have couples in the discussion room saying, well, we're not really avoiding, we're not really achieving, they're sort of in between, and also that motivation. I tell them, if you're not avoiding, wanting to avoid, you're really not, you're really in the achieving mode. And actually, we probably should have avoid, achieve, neutral as another category, probably would be the best. But within the contraceptive family planning data is whether you're avoiding or not, type of thing.
And also, to answer your question, Dr. Pilar Vigil also has a lot of research in MFP in South America.
Not a lot. She has some. She has done some things in regards to classification of mucus with PCOS. She recently did. She has some excellent studies in regards to, we had her at our fertility conference looking at the Team Star program, randomized type of thing. So, but I don't know of, I think the most recent was the classification of cervical mucus with PCO categories type of thing. So,
in South America, she's the primary game in town. Huh?
Yeah, well, she also had a Manuel Cortez worked with her. In fact, he just had me on LinkedIn. He now got an assistant professor job at some university in Santiago kind of thing, but not the same place she's at, so.
I think we have one last question.
Yeah, after working together, I mean, it just seems like there's been some major breakthroughs in methods coming together with resources to start to really move forward to make headway against the world as opposed to each other. And can you guys tell us where we, with research, should go next and where the effort and money should be flowing to get something that everyone can really use?
I got the answer. There's another place that people are doing some good research. Dr. René Echochard from the University of Lyon, France, has been doing research on looking at patterns of LH and cycle length and things like that. Excellent researcher. We have a study that's coming out. It is Dr. Echochard, Dr. Elaine Leva from Ottawa, Dr. Thomas Bouchard at University of Calgary, and Hans Berninger, who is a biochemist who used to work with Quidel. We have a progesterone level protocol that will confirm ovulation, whether it's through after the mucus peak or LH peak, temperature shift in that. We have a protocol of using a urinary P level. And we're publishing in a high-level journal called Steroids. Now, to get that protocol and test it out, we need about 100,000. We have to develop that test strip, even though they had one before. But we need about 100,000 test strips. We need to develop it and then test out that protocol. Right now, we have a Skype relationship, and we're talking about where we're going to get this money. We need about $500,000. So we talked about
that. So 500,000 to finish this?
Yeah.
I have a different answer, which is I think we need to run prospective studies to avoid pregnancy and achieve pregnancy in American women.
Oh, yeah, we need that with ours
that we're teaching with today.
Yeah.
And we could replicate what the Germans have, but we need some investment funds to do it. The Germans have been able to do that through a variety of federal and church funding. They've managed to establish a database here.
Yeah, we know where the funding's from. The Maltese, you know, the Knights of Malta.
Yeah,
that's
what they got money.
What would something like that cost, Mike?
A lot. Yes.
Yeah. A million.
Yeah. And the thing is, you need to think about establishing these things and maintaining them for 3 to 5 years.
Maintaining records and keeping, you know, to be
now, in the age of electronic charting.
Yeah.
You know, the antecedents are in place, but there's an infrastructure that you have to put on top of that to maintain confidentiality, to make sure you're collecting the right data veracity. You know, there's a whole layer of stuff. You know. The reason you pay $2 a pill for your prescription drug is the average price of an approved drug in the United States today, well, in 2008, was $1.2 billion. Okay? It cost the company $1.2 billion to get their letter from FDA that says you can now market this drug to physicians. Okay? So it's not cheap. And you know, 25 promising compounds that start out in the pipeline result in one. So you have 24 failures out of every 25 you start. So it's a high risk business. And so I'm not saying that to be discouraging, but if there was an effort to try and establish this stuff, I think it would be wise to pull a group of people who understand this stuff and begin to think about what it would take to do it, to begin to construct this kind of a framework. But Richard, your study was over 500,000, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much, gentlemen, and thank you, everyone, for being with us.